This week's episode is brought to you by City Center Gallery and Books, located at 112 Hay Street in historic downtown Fayetteville. To learn more about downtown Fayetteville's only bookstore, go to citycentergallery.com. This is the North Carolina Theater Stories Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 9. Our guest today is the indefatigable Anthony Morrison. Anthony is a graduate of the NCSA, North Carolina School of the Arts. He's one who paints, sculpts, and acts, as well as agitates. Anthony, welcome.
Thank you, Lynn. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we've been friends for years and years now. You did Shakespeare Out in the Garden years ago, memorable. But right now, I want you to be thinking about our theme song, Longing to Be in Old Broadway. As you listen to that, did anything come to mind? If you could be on Broadway, acting or directing or having a play produced, what would you do?
I'd probably be an actor, because I've always acted, but being an artist too, acting is my first love.
It's acting. But what, does a play come to mind?
Right off the top of my head.
Uh-huh, I see. Well, anyway, so you would be acting up there. Well, if that happens, I'll take the train up there and see you. Now, Anthony, you see in front of you a red box. There's something in that box. It could be a rock. It could be a postage stamp. It could be an old letter. In a moment, you're going to open that box, and you're going to take out what's in there, and you are going to then describe. Now, let me backtrack a bit. Now, we know what a fine actor you are. We know you're a wonderful artist. But how are you at improv is my question. And so we're about to find out. So you're going to open that red box in a moment, take whatever is in there out, and describe it to our audience. Then you're going to tell us a story. It's completely made up. Partly true, combination. All right, go for it. Open the box.
Okay, I'm opening it. I see a glass, and I see it filled with ice cubes.
Oh.
And that's it. And usually when I see a glass of ice water and ice cubes, it makes me think about my old soul and what an ice glass of water would feel like for an older lady just entering a room. And she would say, Charlotte, get me some tea. There ain't no tea. Well, Charlotte, get me some ice water. There ain't no ice. Oh, Lord, them children gonna eat me at a house and home. I'm thirsty. And she would just think about how much important it is to have something that soothes the body. Because after a long day of work, a glass of ice water would just cool her down. And we've had some hot days. And that's kind of a little bit about how my improv would be. But then she would have lots of kids in the house too. Oh, y'all better stop or y'all give an old lady a heart attack. Y'all stop now. Them children are going to eat me out of house and home. But I love them to death.
Oh, very good. Well, 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 you answered that question. Your improv is second to none. Now, we go from that to, talking to you about, you're one of those fortunate people who graduated from the North Carolina School of the Arts. And tell us about how that happened. How did you get to that school?
Well, actually, I was at Wingate University at first. I was a voice major. And I was about to graduate to get my associate degree in voice. And I was just walking across the bulletin board, and I just happened to oversee a pamphlet for the North Carolina School of the Arts. And I'd been drawing all my life, just portraits of people. And it just looked so interesting. It had high school as well as college. And I just saw that the performing arts field was there, and I thought that this would be a great opportunity for me to experience a lot of things. So I gathered up all my work. I got an application, and I sent in my portfolio of work. And they accepted my interview, and I passed my work around. And they told me, Mr. Morrison, you have a great talent. And I agree with them, of course. But I wanted to be a commercial artist at the time, and they didn't have a commercial art field. Mm-hmm. And so they asked me, have you ever thought about being a set designer? And I said, no, because I had no background in theater or set design. And then they said, well, Mr. Morrison, if you would consider it, we'll give you a full scholarship. I said, well, I think I want to be a set designer. So it didn't take much to convince me. But I told that story to let you know that it was a lot more easier to get in the school than it was to get out, because I was in my junior year. I was one of their top designers at that time. And I was not asked back. And everyone told me, why wasn't you asked back? I said, well, I don't know. I'm leaving. And they said, no, you better appeal. Go to the board.
Because every year you have to reapply.
You have to reapply.
Yeah, that's right.
And I have forgotten the mere fact that when I got there, I didn't originally want to be a set designer. And they remember that as well. So they didn't ask me back to see how much I really wanted to continue in set design. So when I appealed and went back, they reminded me of that. And if I would have just left at that time, I would have given up all that time and effort and the love that I had already developed for it. But the one thing that I love more about that school, it was the first time I actually started calling myself an actor. Because growing up, you have these sort of weird ways of viewing the world and seeing the world. And when I went to School of the Arts, I started seeing people that reflected who I was as an artist. And then how talented they were. And then I said, well, they're talented and they're here and they're artists. Then that must mean I'm talented and I'm here and I'm an artist. So I started calling myself an artist. But it's just always been my passion. And being there, I get to experience dance, music, drama. And I not only did I do my major, I also auditioned for plays. And I got into Kiss Me, Kate, and a lot of the musicals. And it's been a love of my life. My mom said I've been in school long enough to be a doctor. But it's the love of my life. And to this day now, I'm still incorporated in my life.
One of Bob's relatives applied this spring, and we were so hopeful about the School of the Arts. And she's extremely talented. She sings, and she's just marvelous. But there were several hundred people applying, and I think I'm right on this. There were just 17 spots in the freshman class, and she didn't get in. And so she was disappointed. And anyway, so congratulations on that. So. Now, tell us what kind of classes in set design, what were they like?
Well, actually, they were a little difficult when I first started, because I didn't realize you had to know history of decor, color and design, costuming, lighting. All that comes into play when you're designing a set or a design for a play. So you had to be not only talented in putting it, making it come to life, but you also have to take consideration so many different elements to tie it together, which was difficult for me when I first got there. But I realized that most of my fellow students, my strengths were their weaknesses, and their weaknesses was my strength. Uh-huh. If I thought of something, I could make it, I could draw it and manifest it. But if they thought of something, it was a little more difficult. But they had background in how to step by step develop things, where they would give me a painting and ask me to reproduce it through my own, skills from just growing up. I could reproduce it, but I couldn't give you from point A to point, Z how to do it. It just came natural to me. So I've always known it was a God-given talent.
So you were there for 4 years?
4 years. Uh-huh. I got my bachelor's degree in design.
Wonderful. Oh, well, it's just has a worldwide reputation, doesn't it?
Yes.
And I'm told that no matter, if graduates from that school get hired if they want to pursue in New York or wherever. Well, now tell me about your one-man show.
Well, I was told a long time ago that I was a jack of all trades, but a master of none. And that used to bother me and sadden me because it takes too much to master any one thing. I could act, I could sing, I could draw. And I just didn't really have a love for any one in particular. I wanted to do them all. So I came up with an idea called Step Into My Gallery, which I would take my artwork and become the people in my gallery. And I dress like different people, put on different hats, and become different people in my gallery of work. And it became an opportunity to speak to kids from kindergarten all the way to senior citizen centers. And I think I wanted them to view me as being something that I really wasn't in their minds. Yes. That's why I would dress like an old man. And so when I get there, I'm old and feeble. And the kids were like, can I help you, sir? I said, no, child, I got it. That's okay. I've been doing this so long. And then once they introduced me, I'd be like a chicken with his neck cut. I'm like, oh, Lord, look at you, all the colors of the rainbow. And it would freak them out because they was not expecting me to be as full of life. And the whole premise of the show was that kids and all of us are special because we were born. We have a purpose and a reason. And that purpose could be just that smile you give someone every day. Because I say, a smile is just a funny thing that wrinkles up your face. It always tries to find a special hiding place. You smile at me, I smile at you. One smile makes two. That's a powerful thing. And it will make the kids smile. And then I'll turn around and say, there's somebody, every time I say that, they say that I don't smile. I'm never going to smile. And then I go up to them real close. And I say, here I go. Closer, closer. And before you know it, they're smiling. It made me feel good to know that I can make someone else feel good. And I was told when I was a kid that I had an old soul, even when I was young. And so when I do the show, I tap into him. And I usually have an out-of-body experience when I'm doing it. Sometimes I'm listening to myself. Oh, that sounds good. But the best is when you go to the senior citizen centers. I get there real early, and I put up all my artwork and my hats, and I'll come in with the seniors. And I say, child, they sure got it cold in here. I sure hope he's going to be good and warm us up. And the ladies will laugh. And they say, I hope so too. And as soon as they introduce me, they look at me like, what is this old man going to do? But it touched me when a senior told me one time at the gym, she said that as I get older, I feel like I'm disappearing. And that saddened me.
How sad?
Because sometimes they are not loved and shown that they still have a lot more to give to the world. So I incorporated some of the things that I've been taught and felt through the seniors in my life. And when I apply it to them, it puts a smile on their face because I told them that every time one of you pass, it's like a library burns down.
What a thought. Anthony, you are fabulous. How do you incorporate the art?
Well, the art is I bring a gallery of my work. Uh-huh. Black, white, Hispanic, all different nationalities.
They're portraits.
And I become the people in the gallery.
Oh, I get it.
And that the first show I came up with was called Step Into My Gallery. The second one was See the World Through the Eyes of the Children. So I did portraits of kids in a impoverished nation. So the kids look in the eyes of a kid living in hunger and realize how blessed they are to have the opportunities that they have. And it's sort of sad, but it gives them this chance to look into the eyes of a kid who's suffering when they have so many benefits.
Oh, marvelous. So you walk, you set up these portraits
set them up
ahead of time.
Ahead of time on easels.
And then you come in and then you like point to one or something and then you become that child.
Well, actually, I'm sitting there with the shades on and I'm acting real feeble and they introduce me. And then that's when I say that my art is my family. And then I become the people in the gallery.
And so you go from one portrait to another.
But I put on different hats and become different people at the same time and do a rendition of A Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong at the end of it.
Uh-huh. Oh, I know that song. Yeah. My gosh, the next time you do it, give me a call. I want to see it. This is so channelizing. Anthony, you are unique. Are any of these portraits of people we know, or they're just...
Well, some of them are celebrities, but most of them deal with eyes because I tell them that the eyes is the mirror to the soul, and I usually leave a white background so they can paint in their own minds what they may be thinking or feeling. It's to tap in on emotion. Someone may see one thing and another one may see another one.
Yes.
But it always seems to touch people in a way that it always surprises me.
But how do you know what they're thinking? Do you You say it's just the eyes?
No, it's a whole portrait. Usually when I'm asked to a school, they have a certain event that's taking place, or they have a certain thing they want the kids to sort of come out of the whole art show with, and I'll relate it to whatever the subject matter is, what they're dealing with.
I see.
So it varies.
So could you do one example? Think of some portraits that you've done, and pretend that it's here. What would you do? How would you do it?
Well, I hate to keep doing women characters, but there's an old lady that comes in there, and what she does, she's sitting in a rocking chair. And the reason why I was drawn towards the portrait was because she was in an old rocking chair that had all the aging of the tree and the aging of her face and the old torn, ratted dress she had on.
This is the portrait.
This is the portrait. Uh-huh. And I would tell the kids, because this had something basically to do with the DARE program at that time when I was trying to get kids to prevent them from smoking and drinking. And I could say that she would have two stories in mind. You could see her sitting in the chair and she could be going, my. Every time I see that girl, her hair will fall on her face and she throw that little hair behind her head. And I said, girl, you're going to throw your head off your shoulders. And she said, no, grandma, that's where all the girls wear their hair. But to make a long story short, she got in a car with them boys one day and them boys had been drinking. And I told her, now don't you get in that car, make sure you put your seatbelt on. She said, no, grandma, they'll be safe with me because they love me. But them boys had been drinking and she didn't put her seatbelt on. And they went around that curve, and when they hit that curve, she didn't have a seatbelt, and it threw her from the car, and she lost her life. And it gets a hush in the audience because I tell the kids, because she says the last thing I remember the way she used to throw her little hair behind her head, and it gives them a chance to think about not only when you hurt yourselves, you hurt the ones who love you the most, and when I tap on that, those are the happy stories, and then when I tap on one with the kids. I have kids with toys. I have kids running around. I put on different afros when I used to have long hair on my head. I put on my dreadlocks when I want to be a Iman, when I want to be an African from Jamaica. And sometimes I even change myself completely. I say, old chap, you're a good day, isn't it, Lordy? Have you ever seen a black man spot like this? Why are you looking at me like when I was in here? I become somebody and just sort of get some going and just have a lot of fun with it. And the one with the senior citizen, she made me a scarf one time. And she said, what colors do you like? And I wrapped it around my, she made me this colorful scarf that once you wrap it, it covers your whole face. And I knew how much time and effort it put in there. And it let them realize that sometimes just the simplest gesture of love can go a long way.
Well, I hate to stop this. We could go on and on with these different portraits and so on. But right now, Anthony, thank you for that. I do want to see that one day. Every week, it seems, I am appealing to St. Genesius, our patron saint of actors and theater in general. And this week is no exception. You know, Anthony, I've had guests here, wonderful actors, as you are, and I had been talking about, we are what we leave behind. And one of the actors said, well, I don't leave anything behind. I'm an actor and it's just gone. Well, I decided I better bring St. Genesius in on this and see if she won't help us. And this is the letter. Dear St. Genesius, how often have we heard theater patrons say he gave a fine performance? Yes, she did indeed give. That is what actors do. We give. So, if we are what we leave behind, and because theater is a performing art, it is, to be sure, ephemeral. But gone? Not left behind? I don't think so. Through your guidance, dear St. Genesius, and support, every performance lives on in our hearts and minds, perhaps changing lives forever. We actors do leave something behind, something to be proud of. A story to be told again and again. Dear St. Genesius, we remain your humble followers. Now we go to book sharing. And last time we were together, I was sharing Judi Dench's wonderful new book called And Furthermore. And I want to say something more about that in a minute. But right now, let me pick up the other book that I'm going to share today. It's a reference book, Who's Who and What's What in Shakespeare. a complete A to Z reference guide with over 6,000 entries. And you know what? This was written, first published in 1887, and it still is relevant today, and it's been reproduced. And it's a concordance. It's hundreds and hundreds of words that Shakespeare used, but it's a synopsis of all the plays. But I was just looking at this one called this entry on Portia, and I think any actress about to I was just reading in Judi Dench's book, and furthermore, and one of the few Shakespeare's plays she did not like to be in was Merchant of Venice. She didn't like it. She didn't like the characters. I'm sure she played Portia. But any actress that is going to play Portia, if she were to read this entry, I think this would be helpful, this little bit. Portia, she's witty, clear-sighted, generous, elastic in temperament, prompt, and decided in action. Wouldn't that be helpful to an actress who had just been cast?
Most definitely.
In Portia, as Portia. Anyway, this is this week's book, Who's Who and What's What in Shakespeare, by Evangeline O'Connor, and it is still in print. Now we come to the mailbox. And yes, people, I said a couple weeks ago, Anthony, that I like to think of our show just going on, and the radio waves just going on and on and on to other galaxies. And who knows is out there. We're often science fiction writers, you know, speculating about other places that have other Earths, and we can hope that they call ours a penal colony. We can hope that they're a little bit more advanced than we are. But if our show is reaching some pointy ears, I don't know why I think of pointy ears, but I do. And I got some very, very rather nasty letters, thinking I was very, very audacious to think that those pointy ear people aren't understanding our English. Well, who knows? That's all I can say. Well, we know for sure that they're not speaking French. If we English have anything to say about it, right? Well, maybe, what about Esperanto? That's a possibility, isn't it? Anyway, you know, these letters just throw me for a loop every week, and I don't know why I even have this section on letter, on correspondence. I mean, it's been across ever since we started. The rest of these letters are going to be shredded. No, they're going to be taken whole to senior centers for their collages. All right, so now, Anthony, I warn you, you keep saying when we talk about our time together tonight, Anthony and I share the same gym. We go to the same gym, and we're frequently side by side on the treadmill, and I'm going at 2.7 miles an hour, and Anthony's going, years, years younger than I, is going a good deal faster, but he has made a comment or two which wasn't very nice, but that's all right.
No, Lynn.
No.
Don't put that out there. I have not made any negative comments about anything that you do.
Okay.
While still you walk. Sometimes.
All right. I am. Anyway, so no, you're right. I'm exaggerating. Anyway, I did warn you a little bit to your consternation that we do have this segment where I ask our guests in 60 seconds. To tell how they would change theater in Cumberland County. Are you ready?
I guess I'm ready.
Okay, all right. I'm pressing my little stopwatch and go.
I think it has a lot to do with role play. I think what we should do is get us a play that deals with black and white relationships, but reverse the characters and let the blacks play the white roles and the whites play the black roles and let them have to live in the life of that character. And I think it would give people a chance to channel into their inner person and see just how much they know about people in theater. Because sometimes in the local theater, they have particular people that they get for particular parts, and they pretty much typecast everyone. Yeah. And I think if you give them something that would give them a chance to search within themselves and see something outside of not only who they are as a person, but even their own culture, they will make it more exciting and intriguing.
All right. Well, you gave that wonderful idea to our audience in 47 seconds.
Oh, I could have kept on talking you if you wanted me to. I didn't know if I was supposed to stop.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I should have made that clear that you could go on, because nevertheless, you got it, but it's true. You said something extremely important. And I think, the Gilbert has tried to have been colorblind on casting. You know, when we did Merchant of Venice all those years ago here in the Gilbert Garden, Rene Minifee was Shylock. And but I think the role-playing part would take it to another level. It just would be clever casting.
Well, Lynn, that was one of the reasons why I was so intrigued by your theater. Because when I first started with the Gilbert, it was in your home.
Yes.
And we did a Shakespeare in the back. And when you had casting calls, it was open to anyone, no matter what their color, no matter anything. And you made it possible for people who would not think they would get the opportunity to play paroles, play those roles. Uh-huh. And we found they were quite well done.
Well, you were excellent, as so many others were. Well, thank you for that.
I've always wanted to play the lead in Porgy and Bess.
I would love to see that.
I wouldn't miss it. Now, birthdays. We have some celebrated birthdays. And I'm going to ask Mary to alert Bob to where we are on our program, our show. We have some birthdays this week. Anthony. Jerry Herman was born on this day in 1933. Milton Berle, the great comedian, in 1908. Oscar Hammerstein in 1895. Athol Fugard in 1932. Ginger Rogers in 1911. And Anthony Morrison and Lynn Pryor were born on this day.
The same year, right?
And the same
year. No.
Happy birthday. Happy birthday. It's your birthday. Happy birthday.
Oh, my gosh. Anthony, look at this cake.
That is beautiful. Now,
before we blow these candles out. This is a scratch carrot cake, the kind we used to serve at when the theater was here for 8 years. After every performance, it was just delicious.
Fabulous. I remember.
And you remember so well. You
gained so much weight doing those shows.
Well, and it's my, all, it's my and Mishu, our little Tibetan Spaniel, is suddenly showing some interest in our show.
interest in the cake.
In the cake. And let's blow out these out together. Are you ready?
The candles are making me nervous.
1, 2, 3.
Good job.
Oh, and this cake was made by wonderful Karen Argo from our gym. Mm-hmm. And she heard us talking.
That's right. She did make it.
It's scratch, and it's, I can't wait to have when we sign off tonight. I, for one, will be heading for the kitchen and start getting slices for Mary and James and Jason and you and me and Bob. All right, now let's go to call board. We do have some plays. Lights are about to go up on two theaters this very week. We have Sweet Tea Shakespeare. Cherry Orchard a few weeks ago was excellent. But Sweet Tea Shakespeare is opening The Tempest, play that I was in when I was going to San Francisco State University in the Dark Ages. Mm-hmm. The Mountain Theater in Marin County was wonderful. Mount Temple Pius. This is going to open on the 23rd. It's at the Poe House, in the back garden of the Poe House, 23rd to the 26th. So it's great fun to go to anything that Sweet Tea does. and I'll certainly be there opening night myself. Then the Gilbert is, Mary, I've asked Mary to tell us about what's coming up with the Gilbert.
Mary McGee. Frequent guest here.
Frequent guest and is a very happily a frequent person on stage at the Gilbert these days.
Mm-hmm. Very talented actress. Mm.
I come for the cake.
Well, she's...
Okay. No, I think... Okay.
So what's going on there at the Gilbert?
Okay. Well, at the Gilbert Theater, we have our next stage performances coming up. We're very excited about it. We've got many of our local folks. We have some writers, directors, actors, and we're also bringing in some folks from out of town. We have some folks coming in from New York City, and so I'm excited to meet some new talent. Well, they're, you know, doing
sure.
their thing where they are and doing their thing where we are. And
absolutely.
So, and what it is we have one-act plays. There are six of them. And my phone is not pulling them up. There we are. Okay. There are six of them. And it's three shows or two shows. They're different lengths at each performance. And what you do is you buy one ticket, and it's $16. And you can come to all of the performances as many times as you like.
It opens on Wednesday the 20th.
Wednesday the 22nd at 7 p.m. And then Thursday, July 23rd, we have 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. Then Friday, July 24th, 7 p.m. Saturday, July 25th at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. And Sunday, July 26th at 2 p.m. and 7 p.m. And we have different shows during different times. But you can find all that information if you go to gilberttheater.com. And what I like to do is I like to Google Gilbert Theater Next Stage, and then that pulls it all up
all
very
as
easily.
Well.
Yeah,
theater is spelled with an E-R.
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 Because we're American.
Thank you, Mary, so much. One other very, very happy note, Methodist University, you know, for all these years, has not had a theater dedicated that could be used just for the theater department. You know, they've had to use Reed's Auditorium at a cavernous place, or the 1100, seating 1100, rope off most of the seats and put their plays on there, or put the stage on the stage. And it hasn't been fine work there, but it hasn't been most satisfactory. But someone has left $300,000, not left, has given. This is, they haven't died. They have.
School just picked it up.
and that's going to be helping to build a theater. So I can't wait to talk with Evan Bridenstine out there to see what plans they have for that new theater. So that's
dancing.
The
I said, I'm sure Evan is dancing. Yeah,
absolutely. Well, Anthony, it has been absolutely marvelous having you here today. You're an incredible guest, incredible talent, and it was my happy day when I met you 23 years ago.
Well, then I have to only thank you for that, because you welcomed me with open arms when I first came here, and we've been friends since, and I appreciate everything that you've given me the opportunity to do.
Well, thank you, Anthony. And so we want to close with the gong. We should have rang. We forgot to ring the gong, sound the gong at first, but now we're going to do it. This is Lynn Pryor asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company. But Anthony, I do end with something else. It's this question I'm asking all my guests. What is the universal question? What is the universal question?
Then I have no idea.
No idea. Well, I'm going to give the answer to that. I know the answer. And I'm going to give it sometime in the future. So stay tuned.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round, to be back where